It was a queer, sultry summer, the summer they electrocuted the Rosenbergs, and I didn't know what I was doing in New York. I'm stupid about executions. The idea of being electrocuted makes me sick. That's all there was to read about.
Lady Lazarus, I have done it again. 1 year in every 10, I manage it. A sort of walking miracle, my skin bright as a Nazi lampshade, my right foot a paperweight. My name is Becky Turner, and during the course of the semester in English 482, Crafting Literacies, I worked on Sylvia Plath's novel, The Bell Jar. My final project appears as the front page of an old-timey newspaper, recounting the suicide attempt of Plath's protagonist, a young woman named Esther Greenwood. Plath's novel is said to be a semi-autobiographical book, as Esther experiences many of the same struggles that Plath did. At the age of 20, Plath attempted to kill herself by swallowing sleeping pills. She survived and was treated with electroshock therapy. The novel also expertly describes the pressures of the mutually exclusive options of career and marriage or motherhood in the 1950s and 60s. Unfortunately, and likely due to some of these pressures, Plath killed herself at the age of 30, 1 month after releasing The Bell Jar. This obviously influenced the reception of the book, as it is difficult to read Esther's story without seeing Plath's own mental health struggle mirrored in the novel. Plath also wrote a series of poems in the time before her death that build on these violent, emotional, and dramatic topics, and this, in conjunction with The Bell Jar, corroborates the autobiographical reading of her work. She was said to have done some of her best work in these mentally turbulent times. Since the novel's initial modest reception in England and its later success in America, the book has become famous for its realist lens and views of the socio-political world of the 1950s. Feminist, psychoanalytical, and post-structuralist readings are popular. Now, in the novel, Esther struggles significantly with her mental health. The book starts off in New York, where she has won a writing scholarship with a fashion magazine, and although it is a great opportunity for her, Esther finds herself disillusioned with the capitalist, shallow world of New York. It's not at all what she imagined. She returns home to her mother, but her mental health is worsening to the extent where she feels incapable of even writing or reading, and she can't eat or sleep. She tries to kill herself in a series of unsuccessful ways, culminating in an attempt at suicide with sleeping pills, and thus it gets her admitted to a mental institute where she begins shock therapy, just as Plath herself did. The novel deals with these topics of death and rebirth, the complex gender dynamics of Esther's time period, and the expectations for women in her society to reach markers of sexuality, marriage, and motherhood on a certain schedule. These are some of the ideas that I focused on in my final project. Right from the beginning of the novel, Esther shows a fascination with news and media. Her life and perspective of it is influenced by media, as it is already inescapable through the forms of newspapers, tabloids, and magazines. My newspaper takes the headlines that Joan cut out of the newspaper to save for Esther, and frames them alongside the photographs that are mentioned in the clippings. This is what the world was saying about Esther's suicide attempt. I typeset these headlines and the title of the newspaper myself on a letterpress printing press in the UVic Library Book Arts Lab. This was my first opportunity to use a printing press, and the whole process was fascinating and captivating to me. In reflecting on that craft work, I did some research about the history of printing and discovered how much women have been discriminated against in that field. They were barred from print shops, and even when they could work, they were never paid equal wages to men. Their exclusion from unions meant that there are few records remaining of women's involvement and work in printing. Their labor is lost in history, even more invisible than print labor already is. The art of printing now requires a community that is built on teaching, sharing, and passing down knowledge to preserve the tradition of the machines and maintenance. We can learn how to engage in this historically masculinized craft in a feminist, amateur way. And through engaging in the creative relationship inherent in the use of a letterpress, we can honor our own participation in the process and the legacy of women who are forgotten by history. For the collages in my final project, I made each of them on a larger scale before scanning them and arranging everything digitally to create the final newspaper spread. In pasting together and ripping apart images to create these photos, I had the opportunity to think about form in text and art and how it develops. Collage requires a lot of trust in the process, but it results in a beautiful, multi-layered piece of art. I found it to be a useful metaphor for growth, development, and the formation of identity in relation to Esther's journey, as she undergoes many layers of treatment to deal with the multifaceted depression she is enduring. The pieces end up creating a whole new world, and Esther recovers by the end of the novel with the feeling of a rebirth, made new again. I mostly used New York Times and Cosmopolitan magazines to craft these collages. These magazines are orientated towards fashion, art, news, sex, beauty, and trends. This felt very relevant to my overall project, as it's a form of commentary on the role of media in society. By representing celebrity lives, diet tips, and unachievable fashion or body standards as the norm, magazines like these perpetuate unrealistic ideals that lead to dissatisfaction when people strive to reach them. They create toxic cycles of criticism and pressure to look, act, and think in certain ways, or to eat certain foods or wear certain clothes, and they tell you that you're wrong if you're not doing these things. When Esther comes to terms with this view of the media, she takes all of her expensive clothes that she bought with her scholarship money up to the rooftop and throws them off the building, which is an example of her trying to escape that scrutiny and pressure of modern society that is portrayed in the collages. Now, I thought I would briefly discuss the significance of each of these collages. The first, under the headline "Scholarship Girl Missing, Mother Worried," is described as a tardy photo of Esther in her scholarship money clothes, looking false and extravagant and a little monstrous. The deconstructed face represents the lack of clarity and connection that Esther feels with herself. Each of her idealized features is the epitome of beauty on its own, but together they form this monstrosity. The notes on the sides, such as, "doesn't care what she looks like as long as she looks expensive," and you don't even have to like her, press to the same notion of achieving these feminine ideal standards that are above everything else. Later in the text, another magazine is mentioned that describes her time in New York, and it includes a photo of Esther wearing an evening dress and drinking from a fancy cocktail surrounded by men, embodying the glamour and smooth, identity-less concept of the perfect woman. But this image is just as false as this deconstructed face in my collages, for Esther comments earlier that it's exactly the sort of photo that would make everyone think she must be having a real whirl. The second collage under "Sleeping Pills Feared Missing with Girl" emphasizes the necessity for a girl to get married in order to be taken seriously. It's portrayed as the ultimate goal and the solution to Esther's problems if she just comes home. The ransom note cut-up letters in this and the other collages draw attention to the harsh and threatening nature of these demands on women, warning readers of the dangers of criticism and disapproval, at best, that come with going against societal norms. Esther worries that maybe it was true when you were married and had children, it was like being brainwashed, and afterwards you went about numb as a slave, frequently saying that she has no desire to be married and relegated to serving her husband and children for the rest of her life. This is her power in receiving a diaphragm later in the novel, because it gives her the liberty to engage in whatever behavior she pleases without the looming threat of an unwanted marriage or an unwanted pregnancy. The third and fourth collages underneath "Girl Found Alive" contribute to the drama-hungry, glorified presentation by the media of Esther's suicide attempt. The search party in the woods is the least abstract of the four collages, but it shows a crowd of concerned people and the chaos that comes with the tragedy of a missing person. And the final collage illustrates the inadequate care of mental health services in the 50s and the struggles that Esther goes through, such as being labeled crazy. The question mark that follows "crazy" represents the question of whether she really was losing her mind or just not getting the support that she needed. At the end of the novel, Esther's left with many questions as she's being led out of the hospital and says that she wishes she knew the answers, but there's not a neatly concluded cure for her. Nevertheless, she pushes on. In my reflection, I touched briefly on Caroline Levine's theories of form. She discusses how forms can collide to create new and unpredicted results and reactions. In this novel, the use of media as a form collides with the societal pressures that Esther is experiencing that contribute to her depressive state. Returning to the question of the bell jar as an autobiography, we can consider Levine's idea of treating narrative and form as a unfolding activity, and imagine Plath's novel as the experimental unfolding of social conventions that she observed in her own life being translated onto the page. The precise order and organization of the typesetting process that I used to create my headlines, juxtaposed with the chaos and ongoing creation of collaging, reveals the different ways that form can relate to content in regards to my project. In every decision I made, I considered the expectations of society for women and how they shape a reality-distorting metaphorical bell jar over Esther, and perhaps Plath herself's own head. Through this crafting journey, I explored the history of printing, the origins of collage, and the connections of these crafts to the bell jar and Sylvia Plath's own life. And in my exploration of media and the social themes in the bell jar, I attempted to guide readers to a comprehension of issues from the 1950s that are still present today. Issues of gender, sexuality, the choice to get married or stay single, and to understand the influence of the media on how mental health, societal ideals, and stereotypical demands of women are depicted in the public
all
eye.
Turn themselves toward me, and guiding myself by them is by a magical thread. There.
A cake of soap, a wedding ring, a gold filling. Her God, her Lucifer, beware, beware. Out of the ash I rise with my red hair, and I eat men like air.